NBA, you can talk shit.
You can talk.
Have you ever talked shit to an NBA? Have you ever yelled something out at a Knicks game and gotten a look from a player that scared you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. This is many years ago. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this.
All right. No, I like where
I had
going.
A few in me.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was a preseason game. Great. But they gave me the seats that were up close, and they were playing the Wizards, and John Wall had been out for a while. And he just come back. And I was like, fuck the Wizards. I was like, John Wall, you've gained a lot of weight. I'm yelling at him at the
free throw.
And he hears it and he just looks at me like, and then I read later he has like all these problems with depression. I was like, oh fuck, I'm a piece of shit. Yeah. What did I do?
Yeah, you don't want to read that scouting report. You don't want the mental health scouting report.
I contributed to.
Do you also know he's bulimic? And you're like, oh god damn it. Oh god, you're like, Louie, you fatso. Well,
I came up during a different type of fandom where in the 90s you could be ruthless. And now, you read about mental health and they're like applauding. And I'm like, but it's killing our insults.
Yeah.
You know?
There was a moment at my high school, our basketball team was really good.
Yeah.
And the JV would play before varsity. And you would have to go to the JV game if you wanted a seat in the gym because it would just sell out. And so you would have to like go early to the JV game. And when I was a sophomore, that was how I started making friends with older classmen, was I would go and talk shit to the players and be funny. And then older guys on the football team would be like, oh, that's really funny. And then you'd like sit with them and talk shit because you could get reactions out of people. And JV
is satisfying.
Dude, JV, I remember.
Especially it's like comics. That's all we can contribute.
Yeah, that's it.
There was a point.
I was good at making my teammates laugh.
Exactly. And there was a point when you were playing video games for me. There was a point where I stopped caring about the game and I started focusing on the front office.
Yeah.
Like I'll rebuild the Knicks in GM mode because I'm like, yeah, fuck, I can't play.
That's so funny. Yeah. And then you're like, and then I'll put the game on and watch. I'll watch how they do. Look at all my men running around.
You know what the worst thing I ever did in association with the Garden ever was? They asked me to do a benefit once, and it was like a something for the New York Rangers.
Okay.
And I'm a hockey fan, not the way I am basketball, but I like the Rangers for sure. And
well, you're a true New Yorker, so you love the Knicks, the Rangers, Yankees?
Yeah.
And then Jets are Giants. Yeah.
But that's a this solid year with Aaron Rodgers, like when he came, I was obviously rooting for them to be good.
Well, you know? Want New York, I think, wants a good football team.
Yeah, for sure. And the Jets are torture, so you got to kind of get behind just for the sake of the city. But I get in the car. I don't know where I'm going. You know when you're at that point in your career where you don't even look at the deal? You're just like, yeah, whatever, I'll do it.
It's a gig.
Yeah, it's a gig. So they sent me a car. I just get in the car. I get there.
At that point, you're just pumped to give you a car.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was like, hell yeah. This is Lincoln? This is sweet. And then I get there, and it's we're a Trump golf course in, like, Connecticut or something. I'm like, all right. And then I get out, and it's the New York Rangers. All the legends are there. I'm talking like Al Troutwig. Remember him?
No.
He did the Olympics and stuff too. It was like an Anchorman character. He came over to me. He reached a scotch and I was like, oh man, Al Troutwig. I love you, man. Like I grew up on you. And he goes, well, I haven't seen your work, so my opinion remains to be seen. I was like, Jesus. All right.
A little harsh.
Burned by Troutwig.
Yeah. He goes, I don't even know who you are, kid, but I'll sign whatever you got.
It was a weird energy. And then Kenny Albert is hosting.
Okay.
Great guy.
Yeah.
One of the nicest dudes. And he's like, I think at the time, at least, was the only four sport guy. He did like every sport, you know? And he's hosting the benefit.
What's the benefit for?
I don't even know. I don't remember.
Because that's big. Because sometimes you don't know what benefit you're going into.
Yeah.
Like I did a gala one time. This is maybe like 2019. They showed me the money.
Yeah.
What I was going to make. And I was like, absolutely, I'll
do
that.
And you're like, how is this a benefit?
Yeah. And you're like,
how are they making money off
this?
This
is only benefiting me. Yeah. and it ended up being a gala. I wore a Nugget shirt. And I literally, before I did the show, Sam, I went like this. Well, I'll bring a button down in case it's like a nice thing. Everyone was in tuxes and gowns.
Oh, God.
And it was for brain cancer. It was a gala for brain cancer. And before I went up and had to do an hour, three of the leading brain cancer doctors in the world shredded on guitar. Like they played like they were like awesome. And then they're like Dan Soder, and they're just up there,
you go in, my up there in the Kembe Mutombo shirt.
Yeah, I'm up there in the 55 going, you guys ever notice pussy gets dry when you talk about wrestling? And they're like, what the fuck?
That is crazy.
So you go to this thing. You don't know what it's for.
I don't know what it's for, but whatever. It was not. I'm bombing. I'm sorry. I know Coca-Cola was involved sometime.
Did you have to? Here's my question. What were the language restrictions?
There was nothing. I could say whatever.
So they said anything can go.
I mean, they didn't say that, but when you're not told there's language restrictions, you just do.
You don't ask.
Yeah.
And were you doing an hour?
No, it was like 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. But it was a long 10, 15 minutes. Oh, yeah.
Felt like an hour.
And I remember Kenny Albert brings me up, and he doesn't know who I am or whatever, and I eat shit, but he's in the corner. He's the only one laughing. And it's like, it's a bag. At one point, I was like, give it up for Coca-Cola. And I'm like, oh, I'm bombing so fucking hard.
So funny when you're thanking the sponsors. And then, you guys having fun? Guys, how good was Coke Vanilla? Huh? Guys,
underrated.
You're just pandering.
Coke I'll tell you Zero. What,
I find out you're a Pepsi person, I'll kill you. I'll fucking end your life. So
I get off, and it's like a fancy thing. Man, I was talking to some other Rangers legends. Oh, the low point of the benefit was Adam Graves, who I love.
Yeah.
I grew up loving Adam Graves.
I mean, he was a
that
fixture.
That was my team.
Yeah, fixture on the 94. Was he on the 94 team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was an All-Star that year.
Him and Leach.
And Messier and Richter. I think all four were All-Stars.
Yeah.
So he comes up to me just struggling to find something nice to say, and he can't.
What it's the worst.
What comes out is, I love humor.
Oh.
I was like, oh, man. Oh. Adam Graves thinks I suck.
Oh.
So that was rough. Oh. And then Kenny Albert was like, come here. And we get a table, and there's like, it's like a buffet style thing of like lobster tail and crab. Yeah. So we're like, I'm like, all right, it's at least a yummy bomb.
Yeah.
And we're eating, and he was like, that was insane. I don't know how the hell you did that. Like, which sucks when not, I don't know how you did that. You were so funny. You're like, how did you just stand up there and bomb like
that?
How'd
you take that beating?
But then Kenny Albert ended up being like so cool that he was like, take my number. Like, let's stay in touch. And then I remember when I had that show, someone dropped out last minute, and I was like, can you come do the show? And he was like, I'll be there. He came immediately. So shout out Kenny Albert. Great guy.
And unbelievable.
Yeah.
Worth the bomb. To have a friendship with a guy that you've listened call so many important
great guy.
Games.
And his dad is a legend too.
I mean, Marv.
Yeah.
What are you? Marv Albert's the guy.
I mean, that
He's
was
the NBA voice. The voice of the NBA to me is Marv Albert.
He was the man.
Because that's when I grew up watching a lot of NBA.
Yeah.
When you bomb like that and you make eye contact with like Messier, and he's just like,
thank God he wasn't there. That would have been too much. Although he was at the Cellar the other night and was apparently very cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Liz, the manager of the Comedy Cellar.
Liz.
This is hilarious because, you know, they think that you're going to get special treatment if you're a big name sometimes, but it's like 150 seats in the room. So what are they going to do? Kick out someone who already made a reservation?
Yeah, yeah.
She kind of said to him, like, I'm sorry, these are fully sold out. There's not even a standby. So I can get you into the next show is at midnight. And he goes, that's fine. He shows up to the midnight show. Mark fucking Messier.
Damn.
And she
said
he
was so
cool.
That's got to be funny if you're doing the midnight show and there's like a bunch of drunk people and you're like trying to get through your bits and then you look over and you go like, yeah, anyways, is that Mark Messier?
That's happened to you before though. Who are like weird ones you've seen in the crowd where you didn't know and then you just
The worst one I had was, I've told this story before, but it sucked. This is why I never smoke weed right before I go on stage. I'll smoke weed, but you got to give me like a 15 minute window to feel the weed before I go do jokes. So I'm maybe 3 months past at the Cellar. For those of you who don't know, when you get past the Comedy Cellar, it is...
You were, I think, the first of our friend group to work there.
I think it was like... Yeah, out of our friends, I think I got in the earliest.
I think so. It was like you and Nikki, and then...
Well, it was like Schultz, Thomas Dale, Nikki, me, and then everyone... And then
I think
you,
I was next after that, yeah.
You, then List Norman, and all of us. It was all
with him. Norman was terrified. I remember doing a hell gig in Somerville, South Carolina, and Mark's like, I'm fucking nervous. And I was like, you're going to fucking crush. And of course he did. But he didn't even want to ask. Mark is so...
Yeah.
He's so cool like that where he didn't even... I think Amy was his wreck.
Yeah, it was funny because those...
I think you were half my wreck. I think Gary Goldman brought my name up and you were kind of like the slide in, like, he should work here.
Yeah, I remember my wreck was Bobby Kelly and Colin Quinn. I think that's who got me in. And
that's a powerful rec.
And I remember after I got into the cellar, I did a gig in Connecticut, and we took the train, me, Norman, and Matt Ruby.
And me.
And you.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting around telling you guys what it was like to work the cellar.
I know. And I think Matt recorded it.
Really?
Don't you think? I think he recorded it. Oh, yeah.
It might have been on like a... We did
Joker's Wild, which I think was a front.
With Fenoya.
Yeah.
With that biker gang.
Yeah.
And I just remember the pizza was great in New Haven.
Oh, it's the best pizza in the country.
And then I remember we got really drunk...
On the train ride back.
Yeah, we drank Jameson.
Didn't I bring something?
Jameson. You brought a bottle of Jameson.
Yeah, and that was my move whenever I did a gig on a train ride back. I'm like, I'm getting fucking hammered.
Oh, we got real drunk. And then it was like one of those things where we got back and we were like, where should we go? Because we're drunk and we're back at Penn Station. So a couple months into me working at the cellar, I had just started doing new stuff on stage. Because you do your act that kills when you're in there. Because you want to be cemented as like, you want everyone to think that you believe. Sure. That, like everyone to be like, oh no, he's good working here.
And you want everyone to see you kill. So it was yeah. Like, yeah, I get, yeah.
And you know when you get like two good new jokes and you lead with them because you're like, oh, I love these. You're like excited to show people.
And it's just to keep you from going on autopilot.
Yeah. So I'm like, I have these, and they ended up, I think being in my like Comedy Central half hour or whatever, or it might've been, but it was my tattoos joke. Yeah. I just wrote my tattoos.
Oh yeah.
Joke.
It was like the old people.
Yeah. Like tattoos on old people are scary on young people. And it was like,
what are the soybeans?
Yeah, it was a koi fish.
Koi fish.
Yeah. And like, and it was murdering when I was opening with it. So I was like excited to show people, dude, I'm doing that joke. And this lady gets up. And I go, just offhand, I go, you got tattoos? Is that why you're walking? And she has a cigarette in her hand and she goes, I'm going to smoke. I was here on Tuesday and you did the exact same set. And I was like, and I'm new at the club. I'm still a young comic. So I'm like, well, what do you expect me to? I'm like,
You're drowning.
I'm drowning.
Yeah.
And at that exact moment, I swear to God, at that exact moment, Esty and Bill Maher walk into the room and go to the jumper
Bill
seats.
Maher goes, oh, really? You're doing the same act?
Oh, opening with the same stuff. And I had just smoked a joint with Big J. Like, yeah. Big J and I were outside. I, like, smoked a joint with him, walked on stage, and this happens.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, spinning. I'm spinning because it's happening. I'm spinning because I'm also in the process of getting high. Like, I'm going up. I'm, like, getting higher and higher as this is happening. I reach back for like old jokes and I'm just like stumbling through them and I end up having like a D set.
There's nothing you can really say because you can't, once you explain it, you're from a point of defense. If you say like, well, this is how you build an act. You're doing the same set for a while until you tape
it. Imagine doing that, going down on a woman, and she's like, what are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm trying to make you wet, and I'm trying this to do this by fingering it.
You trolled your tongue the same way on Tuesday.
Yeah. She goes, you always do this. But it was one of those moments where I was like, I'm failing in front of the booker.
That same thing happened to me in front of Jon Favreau, where I did the same set two straight times, and he saw me do meh two straight times in a week. And I know...
Where was this?
Caroline's was the first one. It was me and Michael Che opening for Kevin Nealon at Caroline's. I think he's friends with Kevin Nealon.
Okay.
And it's like, I fucking love Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
Like, Swingers? Are you kidding me? That was like iconic to me. And then...
And all the stuff he's done.
He's directed like so much good stuff.
Yeah.
He's and dude, his episode of The Sopranos is one of the funniest ever. But yeah, I see him and I was like...
Did you see him in the crowd or did you know he was there before the show?
I saw him after the show and Che pulled a really awkward move because he was younger at the time and he was like, we should all get a picture together. Like all of us. And you could tell he was like, ugh, he did it. So somewhere there's a picture of all of us. And he was, you know what? He was like nice enough, but neither Che or I did well. So it was one of those things where
he was like, it was a charity event. He was like, I'll take a picture with you.
But he wasn't like, oh, these guys are cool young comics. I don't think. And it sucks. It's like, I'm a fan, but I'm like, I didn't say any of that. Cause I was like, what does he care?
Unless you kill. If you have a good set, you have the right. Because then the footing changes.
Yeah.
And you can go like, pretty good at this, huh? You know what else is pretty good? Swingers. And it goes, yeah.
You know who else is money? Me. No, but we did all weekend and they were all hot shows. And that was like the one dud that he came to on the Sunday. But then that week, you know, when you're a young comic, you get a lot of fill-in spots. Like maybe Norton or Colin Quinn can't make it. So you get that text from Esty. Can you do 8:35 tonight? And you're like, fuck yes, I can.
Yeah.
I see his face in the front row. And again, I don't know he's there midway through the set. I'm the young seller guy. Oh. So I'm just trying to.
Trying to kill.
And I did fine.
Trying to do as well
sure,
as you can
I'm
do.
I'm sure he was like, this fucking goon again.
He goes, I know these jokes.
Yeah.
Because that's like, you never think about that. When you, if you saw a band again, if a band randomly came on and you had already seen them and you're like, I don't like these songs, that you'd be like,
ah, this right. Song. But if they love the songs, you're like, play the hits.
Like, all right, let's
but if,
go.
But if you don't like it, yeah.
On the road, I can't sing or I would say it. Imagine if I thought I could sing. I'd be obnoxious shit. Cleveland, Ohio, I'm coming to Hilarities. It's a very fun comedy club, and I have a fucking blast every time I'm in Cleveland. Might stop by the candy store, work on this pre-diabetes. February 22nd through February 24th. A couple of the shows are already sold out, but there are some tickets available for Hilarities in Cleveland. Then San Antonio. I'm doing a makeup date at LOL on February 29th. Leap Day. I will be in San Antonio at LOL. Tickets available there, dansoder.com for those tickets. Cincinnati, Ohio, I'm coming to Go Bananas. First time I've been there in 9 years. I love that club. Dan St. Germain is going to be with me. I'm there March 8th and 9th. Nailed it. I'm there March 8th and 9th. And then Louisville, Kentucky. Comedy Off-Broadway in Louisville, the birthplace of Hunter S. Thompson, possibly the greatest American writer of all time. I will be there on Sunday, March 10th. Sundays in March don't mean shit because football's done. So come out and see me at Comedy Off-Broadway in Louisville on March 10th. So there you go. Cleveland, San Antonio, Cincinnati, and Louisville. All at DanSoder.com, plus all my other dates. All my dates are up there. Anything booked is at DanSoder.com. Go check if I'm coming to your city. Good luck with the rest of your day. And you know what? Don't take anything that people do to you personal. I'm just talking to myself at this point. Because when I moved to New York, I was hacky as fuck.
No, you weren't hacky.
Well, you're coming from Tucson, so you're doing like
road
stuff.
But you weren't hacky, you were young. I mean, that joke is like a point of view joke from a young comic.
But I wrote that Walmart joke here, and I was like, that was one of the first jokes.
Well, then I didn't know you when you first moved here, but that...
When I wrote that, I was like, because when I moved here, I was doing like lifestyles of the rich and famous jokes. I was doing jokes that you're like,
we were young, man.
I know, but you look back at it.
Yeah,
like,
fuck. I have friends who knew me then, and they will yell out punchlines of old bits of mine. I'm like, all right, we get it, dude. I didn't come out of the gate fucking killer. What do you want from me?
You were a great writer early. My question is, are there, because we, you know, we talk about comedy, me and you will talk about comedy for hours. Are there other professions where they feel this way? Where like, is a lawyer like, do you remember when I argued that Joyer case and it was wrong? And I like argued that, like, do like, are real estate agents like, oh, remember when I said it was a two bedroom, two bath? And really, it was like, do they bomb?
No, because like, real estate agents just lie anyway. So who gives a shit?
Oh my God. They go, this place is great. The haunted houses have been on the market the whole time. And they'll be like, it's great.
But no, I think if you're like a trial lawyer or you're like maybe a doctor, I think there's a lot of
professions. Dude, if doctors bomb, people die.
Yeah. But I think I'm sure they make mistakes.
Well, did you know my mom used to work for an insurance company that did malpractice? So she would like, her company would insure doctors in case there was a malpractice case. Right. Did you know with doctors, and I read this somewhere, so it's real. It had to be real. It was printed.
Can we get in real time, or do we fact check?
No, we don't fact check.
Right.
People in the comments do.
Okay.
Click the link, subscribe, check if my work is wrong. But there was this article about doctors with good bedside manner get sued for malpractice.
More?
Less than doctors with bad bedside manner.
Yeah.
But it's been proven that doctors with good bedside manners have more mistakes than doctors.
Because they're making up for something.
To make it up.
It's almost like comics that are overselling a joke.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that makes sense. But I will say, I like when a doctor has a good bedside manner.
I love it.
It puts me at ease.
I love it. And I have had...
I've always said they should teach a class in medical school. Make it one credit, bedside manner.
Just how to come in and go like, I know you got a lot of worry, but here you go. Or like, it's like, don't come in and just go, are you ready for the results? Zhuzh it up.
Oh, dude.
They should hire us to teach them how to write jokes to go in for bedside manner.
I have a question, actually. This made me think of something. I had a joke idea and I was like, does anyone have this joke? And it might, I was like, maybe it's soda if anyone has this.
Yeah.
Do you have a bit about how veterinarians have to deliver horrible news about animals and that must be hard because some of them have hilarious names?
No, that's a great
joke.
That
was my angle. It's like you come in and you're like, very funny. Unfortunately, Waffles has a malignant tumor. Or you say, Captain Peanut Butter only has 3 weeks left.
I love that.
Because I was like, does anyone have that? Because for some reason I thought, like, if anyone does this, you ever just write a joke and you're like, if anyone's done this, Admiral, it's this guy?
Yeah. Admiral Snugs has brain cancer. And you go like, what? Yeah. Zuzu, your little like Zuzu only has 3 weeks to live, and you go like, oh my god, that's so
brutal,
funny.
But it's like a fucking also like
I think vets probably have one of the hardest jobs because they.
You
can't,
know what's hilarious? I said that on stage, and people applauded, and I was like, I meant veterinarians.
Oh,
but I'm like, but you guys are better. Like you guys are
but
braver.
But we do mean, I mean, vets are braver.
But it's funny to say vets.
It's also funny that those are the two groups that get confused.
I know.
Where you go, either a guy that liberated Fallujah or someone that knows how to treat cat cancer. It's like, how are you guys? You guys do the same thing. You're like a vet or a vet. You're like, I'm a vet. So what kind? You go, I killed some civilians. Or you go, I'm a vet. And you go, I declaw cats. And you go, oh, that's all right. But you, with vets, they can't talk to their patients. Like, doctors can be like, is that hurt?
Right.
They just have to wait for a thing to try to bite them to be like, just, okay, so that's
you,
where
you just
it
feel a lump and you squeeze it. And if they get angry, you're like, might be a tumor.
Yeah.
You know?
Or it could just be a fat deposit. Have you ever petted a dog? Now, you have an old dog right now.
It's my girlfriend's dog, but she's a 17-year-old street pug with one eye. I love the dog.
But sometimes those old dogs, you'll pet them and there'll be a bump.
Oh, she's got like, bumps.
And you're like this. You go, is this bad? And they go, it's water. They just like say something. And the dog's like,
dude. The other thing, the dog permanently has the tongue hanging out.
Oh, do you ever try to put it back in?
No, it's fine. I like that the tongue's out.
Just constantly hanging.
She's a mess. Dude, but I love her.
It just proves when you get old, you have no control of what's going to happen.
No, I think she's always had it out, but she's just like
17-year-old
dog.
She's
gray. Yeah, she's awesome. She's got a little chihuahua in her, so she's a real bitch. Chihuahuas are just awful.
Dude, meanest.
But the pugs are like the warmest dogs. They're like the Chinese emperor dogs.
They are like, Shane's got an incredible bit on his special about dogs or Down syndrome, cats or autism. I would say out of all the dogs, pugs are the most Down syndrome.
I
of
love
all
them.
The smushed face and just the constant loving.
Something about the smushed face.
And
I
they
love.
Just love. You do? The
I
breathing
love
doesn't.
Well, look, it's sad that they have the breathing problems. Like,
if you just hung out with a guy that the whole time was like, you'd be like, you all right? And he's like, I'm fine. I'm fucking fine. Yeah. Whenever I'm around.
David Tell is my favorite comic.
That is. That's hilarious. But, I never thought of Attell as a pug. Where he's like, okay. No,
Norman and I describe Attell as a cat. Because he just shows up.
He's
and
an outdoor
excited.
Cat.
He's an outdoor cat. You're excited. He shows up, and then you get a couple moments with him, and then it's just gone.
Yeah, he'll rub under your hand, and you go like, "Oh, he likes me," and then he leaves. Big J, Attell, Ari Shaffir. I'm trying to think of all my friends that are outdoor cats.
Yeah, a lot of them.
Like Big J.
Ari looks like that cat.
Oh, it's crazy. Big J, though, if you can't find him, just go outside and go like. Jay, he's out there. Same with
By the
Attell.
Way, you said friends who can't breathe. You just mentioned three of them.
Yeah. Well, they're all smokers.
Yeah.
Except Ari. I think Ari.
Ari smokes a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just smokes weed. But with the Knicks, when you're getting, I'm always fascinated by this because you drink at a game and you're friends with the guy that owns Madison Square Garden.
No, I'm not.
You know,
with Dolan, but I'm friends with David. Yeah,
the guy that
he runs
that works there.
Yeah, he's a big deal there. He's awesome.
Getting drunk and going to your friend's work.
Yeah, he doesn't drink. It's work for him.
Yeah, but when you're there, like this morning when you woke up. Did you have the hangover of like, did I get too drunk and yell shit out?
No, I wasn't bad. I'm encouraging. I definitely knew I was drunk because I hung it for a second and Jalen Brunson walked by and I was like, Jalen. And I put my hand out and he high-fived. I was like, damn, I'm like a fucking Make-A-Wish kid sometimes.
Yeah, but that is cool.
Yeah.
Have you met Brunson?
I met him at a Rangers game once and he was so nice.
Were you giddy?
It was, I'm pretty cool around... Like, there's not a famous dude that I'd be like, oh, fuck, except Knicks, really, because I love the Knicks. So
we've been doing comedy a while. We've been able to do some cool stuff. There's not one person that would throw you off your game.
There's people I respect that I would be like, oh, this is cool, but like...
No one would make you giddy.
I think you get excited to meet certain people, but
even like classic Knicks, you've met them.
Yeah, the only one I haven't met is Ewing.
Would that make you weird?
I loved him. He was a big part of my
childhood.
But
if you just like, if you were just like, let's say you go to a Knicks game and all of a sudden you're like hanging somewhere and they go, oh, Sam, have you met Patrick? And you turned around and there's Patrick Ewing.
Well, that would be huge. One of the playoff games that I went to last year, I was seated next to, the Jonas Brothers were to my left.
Great.
Which I don't know any of their
songs.
That's
me getting giddy.
Really?
No.
That would be great if you were a closet Jonas Brothers fan.
Open the closet, dude. It's just one
of them's in there.
Yeah, I go, honestly, a court had to get involved because Joe said I was around too much.
No, but then they get up and Starks was on the other end. So Starks came over and sat next to me for a part of the game.
Why did he come over to sit next to you?
Because it was open and he's friends with the guy, David.
Great.
So there was one big play where we were like, yeah. And then he just went to this and I fucking high fived him. And I was like, this, my childhood dream is, yeah, this is insane. But
if I met Joe Montana,
you'd lose it.
Or Ronnie Lott.
Yeah. You're such a Niners guy.
I would think if Ronnie Lott was like, hey, nice to meet you, I'd be like, can I talk about like 40 things with you right now? I have a large list of people that would make me giddy. That's why I'm asking.
Who'll give me another?
Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, you love him. You love Queens of the Stone
Age.
My
favorite band of all time. I don't think I'd want to meet them because I love them so much.
That's how I felt about Adam Sandler, and then he turned out to be...
Oh, yeah, but then you went on the road.
He turned out to be the coolest dude ever.
Chappelle, I was obsessed with. I got to meet him. I don't think I'm giddy about Chappelle anymore. I don't think there's anyone in comedy that I'm giddy about.
Well, you get comfortable. I mean, like, when a person's nice, they put you at ease. Like, I've, of course, when I was first hanging out on the road with Adam Sandler, I was like, this is like a dude that gave me so much happiness as a kid.
Did you ever bring up, because I mean, our generation, Adam Sandler, the albums, like, people talk about.
Yeah, those were big
Happy
for me.
Gilmore and Billy Madison.
They're all going to laugh at you.
I mean, dude, they're all going to laugh at you. And I mean, What the Hell Happened to Me, I think, is the reason, part of the reason I do comedy.
Yeah, it's
like
classic.
I listen to What the Hell Happened to Me so much. The GOAT, Louis Katz and I were like going bit for bit.
Oh, dude, the new GOAT song was so good.
I didn't even hear it.
It's amazing. But yeah, he.
So you're
the
on
only
the road.
The only time
him.
I got nervous with Sandler is like when we would be playing ball, and I'm like, just
if you're
I'm
balling with
yeah,
Sandler.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm like, just don't miss an open shot. I'm more nervous about that than I am like the set. Yeah. I'm like, the set's going to be fine.
Comedy's fine. I put in the hours.
But like,
that.
If I'm on his team, so Joe Vesey, you know Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
Joe is on the team too, and Joe's really good. Joe can really hoop.
And what's the team?
It was me, Adam, and Joe. We played. I've gone out with him a few times, and every time.
Was Joe on the road with you guys too?
Yeah. So okay. Every time I'm usually on Adam's team, but then the worst time was I showed up in Vegas and I was playing the win and he was doing the arena. So I said, I'm in town. And he goes, come play ball.
Does he hoop every day?
He plays a lot of basketball. And this time I was on his team the first game and I was just like a little slow. It's Vegas, you know, I'm a little off. And I played like shit. We all played like shit. And then the teams were switched up. And I was on fire. And that's the worst feeling when you're like...
You're burying him.
Yeah, but he's good still.
Dude, I've watched clips of him showing up. First off, he's my fashion icon.
He looks good.
I just want to dress that way all the time. Just giant sweatpants, unlaced Timberland boots, and like a Space Jam t-shirt that's too big.
Yeah.
I love that he dresses like a heroin addict.
I how he plays too, because he's like fun to be on the team with because he's unselfish, but he hits his shots. So he's like, he'll do like weird Rondo passes sometimes.
I mean, it's crazy if you miss a shot and have to apologize to Adam Sandler.
He's also just such a feel-good guy. So I remember we were leaving one day. We were just playing dudes in the gym. I want to say it was like Seattle or Portland or something. We found a really nice gym. And he's just so cool. I think it was just like, whoever's around who can play, come by.
Sure.
So we're doing like best 3-on-3s. We were 6-0 against pretty decent dudes because, you know, like I played like shit that day. But when I'm off, I'm like, I'm going to get every loose ball. I'm going to get rebounds.
You're going to hustle.
I'm going to hustle. And I hit one fucking nice ass step back at the end, and as we're leaving I was like, I fucking suck today, and he goes, but you hit him when they mattered. And I was he's so positive, you know?
How did you not jizz in your pants at that moment where you're like, thanks Sandman, can I call you Sandman? It's funny when you think about like nicknames that you've heard other people call them. I had a really douchey moment.
He'll say it about himself on stage. Dude, the show is so funny. His live show is so fucking good.
Oh my God. He's on his special that he put out.
It's so good.
It's great.
It's all new now. It's all new songs.
So when you go on the road with Sandler, how did that get proposed to you? Was it like he saw you and then he's like, hey, why don't you want to come on the road?
I met him years ago through my agency. I think he just saw a late night set or something. And he was like, oh, this guy's good. If he ever wants to like bounce ideas or like help me like work on a new set.
When you get that call, are you like, are you fucking with me?
Yeah, I remember I talked to him on the phone. I was kind of like, that was enough. I was like, first off, he's a dude I was scared to meet because I just have such a high opinion of him.
Sure.
But I mean, then
he's a legend.
But then... But then, yeah, he was so cool. And then, you know what happened? I sent him some stuff that I guess just was like meh or just wasn't right for him. But he was like, I'll try some of these, you know?
Oh, you sent him some jokes.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but I think he normally just does his own shit. I think it's just like he likes to kick stuff around.
He's a comic.
He's like a comic. He likes
to talk jokes and shit.
Yeah, but then... So then what happened was we were always cool. We'd like message back and forth here and there. And, you know, I watch all his shit. So I would just send him an email. I'm like, oh, just watch Uncut Gems. Loved it, you know? And then
here's my question. Do you ever, when you're ever typing those emails?
Yeah.
Are you ever like, what am I doing?
I mean, who's going to be mad at me saying that you like their work? I don't know.
But I always just feel like, I don't want to bother them. Like even people that I'm friends with.
One
like,
sentence is a bother. I don't know.
Just like, I've always felt like, anybody like that.
Yeah,
like,
of course you have imposter syndrome. Sure. But yeah, I mean, also, like, he was nice to me and he said he liked my jokes. So it's like, what are you going to do? And then,
so you send him that.
Yeah. And then, and he was always like very friendly back, like Sammy or something like that.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I told him a story of when I was in camp, we were, I went to like a summer camp one year and we got to see one movie per summer and everyone was like, I want to see U-571, the submarine movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, fuck that. We got to see Mr. Deeds. That was, I went on like, I got like a real high horse about it. I was like, we're not going to see Mr. We get one movie. We're not going to see the new Sandler. Yeah. So I was pissed about it. And I convinced the counselor to lie to everyone and say he saw Mr. Deeds and it's the best movie ever. So he lied to everyone.
So you're like a politician.
Yeah.
You like got him in on your side. Yeah, that's your little House of Cards moment.
Yeah. And everyone was like, well, I guess
I need you to do an important thing for me. And then this camp is going to be a great summer. If it's not, the head counselor is going to think that I had to suck your dick in a cabin. And the guy goes, what do you want, Morrell? I want you to tell him that Mr. Deeds was the greatest thing ever. Or else these guys are going to think that you molested
him. He did it and we saw it and everyone loved it. So it worked out.
There a lot of great jokes in that.
So I loved Mr. Deeds. So
Mr. Deeds, Buscemi with the fake fun. Eye.
Al Sharpton, weird cameo. It's like there's weird, funny
all
shit.
All of them.
So
McEnroe.
Yeah. McEnroe's great in that.
The McEnroe cameo alone.
Ooh, I bombed his benefit once. Did you ever do his benefit?
No.
I bombed it. It was such a bad crowd, and I told a lady to shut the hell up. And McEnroe was I was like, I gotta laugh at him.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. But
in any of those situations, that what matters is if McEnroe laughed. It's just about the small.
But
laughs.
It was a bomb. And then so we were always like friendly, but it was never like, you know, it's Adam Sandler. I'm not gonna bother him past it every like 7 month like this. You did, you know, nothing crazy. But then. So the day my Netflix special came out, I was on the road. I was going from Texas. It's my opening bit on the road right now. It's about missing a flight. And it was a hell day of travel. I missed like, I had to take 3 flights to get to Vermont. I missed the show, whatever. And it was just like one of those things where you're like, finally got the special on there. And now it's like the worst day and you're just cranky.
Cause the world was like, oh, you want a great day?
Yeah.
Fuck off.
So I was pretty bummed and I was like, I was getting pretty shit faced on the 3rd flight. Cause nice. I was like, I missed it. I missed the gig. Vitor's texting me like, we're not gonna, you know, he's in Vermont. He's like, it's okay, buddy. When we get here, we'll get dinner or something. And
getting airplane drunk.
We had airplane
tiny
drunk.
Little bottles of scotch.
And I bought the Wi-Fi just to, you know, text Gary and stuff. Just, you know,
you also want to check on how the special's doing.
Exactly. So I was checking that as well. And then I'm just getting emails from Adam, like one after another, like watching a new special, love it, like one after another, like emailing the way people text.
Did you ever get too many emails to the point where you're going like, by the 3rd or 4th email from Adam Sandler, you go like, chill, dude.
No,
hey,
no.
Hey,
everyone
water,
was
hey,
awesome.
Water boy. Keep it in your pants.
No, every time
you're
I was like, this is fucking
you're
awesome.
Feeling yourself and you're like.
So it's like, you get something pulled and then you get back in. I was like, oh, and then he's like, can I call? And I was like, yes.
Please.
So when I landed there, so he was just like, oh. So then it got to a point where he would like, he was just like bouncing bits off me, you know? So I'd be on the, I'd be in like Louisville, you know, and I get a voicemail like, woo-hoo-hoo, I got a joke idea, you know? And you'd be like, oh shit. All right. So I like listen to it and then be like, you know, what I like or what I don't. But like, yeah, his premises are so weird and hilarious. Like,
have you hung out with him enough to the point where the fandom is completely gone?
No, I'll always be a fan.
Like, where he's like Adam or something, or like Sandman. Is he now just Sandman to you? Like, are you just like, yeah, it's my buddy Adam? Like, I'm
always
like, oh, like Colin Quinn. I still geek out.
I love Colin so much. He loves Colin.
Yeah, when Colin,
we all love Colin.
The coolest movie
ever. Every comic looks at David Tell and Colin Quinn as legends.
Which brings me to my favorite thing that I saw, because I don't know Sandler, but one night I was at the Cellar and he came in, and I remember he was wearing this like Marty McFly vest because it was like kind of cold out, and it was back before they did the remodeling of the bar. So the, you know, the table was out there and they had to get by the bar.
Right,
remember how it used to be? So he comes over and he sits where the chair is, where you like at the head of the table. It's like layer of comics around him because Adam Sandler's at the Cellar. So everyone's like, you know, looking or whatever. And I was sitting off to the side and I see Attell walk up into the Olive Tree, go to the bar to get coffee. He's got his leather gloves on and his hat. So he's going to go sit outside with his hot coffee and smoke. I see Sandler see Attell walk to the bar. Everyone's like leaned in, listening to what Sandler's saying. And he just goes, Dave. And he's like, Dave. And I watched Sandler excitedly get up and like, excuse me. And like goes over and Attell's like, they're getting his coffee at the bar. He's like, hey, Adam, you know, and Sandler's like, oh, what's up? It made me love Adam Sandler more. How much he was
loves
excited.
Comedy the way we love comedy.
You don't know. You don't know what these people are really like. And you see him get excited about Dave Attell and you go like, that's
they came
awesome.
Up together, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Colin started with Sandler and Chris Rock. Like in 1984.
Yeah.
And that's what's always funny is like, I had to really keep it in my pants when I would open for Colin, the couple times I opened for Colin.
Yeah.
Because I just want to tell him about all the stuff that I know about his life. And it, and he, at one point we're driving back, we were doing like SUNY Binghamton and we're like driving back and he goes, that's the problem with you young comics. You guys fucking know everything that already happened. And I was like, I know, but I just want to talk about it.
And then you're like,
it.
Okay, guy who has a show about history.
Yeah. But he understands it where he's
no,
like,
I know.
He's like, you guys are all so well researched that we can't really get away with anything anymore.
I feel like maybe, but they were nerds too. Like you tell me Quinn didn't get like excited for like, you know.
Well, that's what I didn't know. Attell was a nerd until he did his Unmasked with Bennington at Skankfest. And I sat to the side of the stage and listened. And I didn't know Attell was like a huge Richard Jenny guy.
Yeah, like, he used to open for him.
That's what I mean. And he like, to hear him nerd out about
Richard
somebody,
Jenny was great.
I mean, joke.
Story, man. You know, Dave loved him. And I remember being on the road. I remember being on the road with Dave once and he was like, I was like, who are your favorite comics when you were young? And he said, Bill Hicks and Alan Havey.
Alan Havey.
Yeah, I love Alan Havey.
Dude, John Stewart to this day talks about an Alan Havey set from New Year's.
Yeah.
Like in the 80s or like the late 80s.
Oh, man.
They'll be like, it's the best set I've ever seen anybody do.
John Stewart was a great stand-up.
So
when he did like hour, like that old hour Unleavened is a great hour.
He was the person. John Stewart was the person that I said, out of all your heroes, if John Stewart's one of them, meet him. Because he came to the Cellar and I've never seen anybody as relaxed, cool, nice, and funny.
Legend.
He sat at the table and I was doing like...
And he loves the Cellar.
Like
the Cellar's... I love that when it means... Because it means something to us. So when it means something to the legends,
and
too.
I was doing Tom Dustin's room in Key West. This is years ago, and I was doing like a one-nighter in Key West or whatever, and it was me, John Stewart, Michelle Wolf at the table, and I was like, oh, I got to go to Key West tomorrow or whatever, and he goes, you doing the Rascals? And I was like, I don't know if that's there anymore. I'm doing my friend's room, and he was like, oh, but the fact that he just wanted to go into like...
He's one of us. Yeah. It's cool when one of us is that type of, like, because he was, I mean, the John Stewart Daily Show was incredible. I mean,
it's the best.
I did a Fallout spot on Night of Too Many Stars, The Beacon.
I remember when they were doing that.
So I did a set and he was hosting. He was very cool. And I remember I was like, I'm not going to bother John Stewart. We talked a little bit and he was like, you ever play Mark Ridley's Comedy Castles? Like, of course. But I'm like, I love that.
He knows that.
I go, I'm not going to lie. Seeing headshots like yours on the wall fucking helped when you were a young comic. Yeah. Like, but yeah, I love Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
Jon Stewart did the thing that I never, I like bringing off when someone is famous at the Cellar, I don't want to like ask them about work at work.
Yeah.
So I try to find something like when Schumer would bring Bill Hader around during Trainwreck, I always used to love to ask him about writing on South Park. I didn't he just left SNL.
God, what a career.
So I didn't want to talk to him about that. I wanted to talk to him because I'm a huge South Park fan. That way it's kind of like not as like, dick sucky, you know, you're not like, oh, you're unbelievable. It's kind of like, hey, you did this.
That's
And I just, so Jon Stewart did a spot at SummerSlam with John Cena. Jon Stewart's son is a huge wrestling fan, was a huge wrestling fan. So I was at SummerSlam because I'm an adult wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Peep it. But Cena did his finishing move. He did the attitude adjustment to Jon Stewart. And so I was like, dude, what was that like? What was that like taking a bump? And it was so funny to hear Jon Stewart be like, it hurts, you know, in a very Jon Stewart way where he goes, it hurts. But then the thing that he said about me is, and I would never think this, and this was such a funny detail that he said, he goes, I'm an older man. He said, when he did that move to me, you knew I was okay because the first thing I did was pull my shirt over my gut. He was like, I landed and I could feel my belly was exposed.
That's hilarious. So he goes,
I landed and immediately pulled my shirt down. And I was like, that's the most human reaction I've heard to like a wrestling move being done to you.
He had a joke, Stuart, back in the day about how black people and Jews are similar because, you know, black people, they have the blues. Jews, we complain. We just never thought to put it to music.
That's fun.
You know, it's like, I think he goes, my grandmother had a great jazz album. It was called It's Too Hot in Here.
That's great.
Perhaps you've heard the B-side. Now it's too cold. Yeah. I mean, just like a perfect clean. He had so many jokes like that where I was like, wow, I love how he wrote.
He's a guy wherever he pops up, like during the COVID thing where he went on Colbert and he's like, it's in the Wuhan lab. And you see Colbert being like, please stop, John. And you just see him being a comic man like, nah, I'm going for it.
He's so good. And he, oh man. So I did that.
Fights for Vets benefits, like the 9/11 thing that he did.
That was incredible.
I mean, all the stuff he does, you're just like, man,
he's beyond, like when people try to label him as partisan, you're like, how can you do that when this is something that's clearly for everybody?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like
any human would see. You know?
He was my favorite celebrity interaction at the Cellar.
I barely talked to him. I had a little interaction with him. I probably didn't pick the best set list for Night of Too Many Stars.
Did that not go well?
Well, I closed on a dead baby joke, which I thought was pretty damn funny, but I get off stage and I see Harvey Keitel and he looks at me like, and then I see Steve Buscemi and he's like, and I'm like, all right, well, this is rough. And then I turn to my left and Paul Rudd is there and he's like, and I'm like, thank God, Rudd.
Yeah, right.
I got to. Rudd was cool as hell.
That's the guy you want coming up to you.
Hey, man, I fucking love Keitel and Buscemi, though.
Yeah, but Keitel, I could see taking a joke too soon. Do you know Colin Quinn's Copland story about Harvey Keitel?
Is Colin Quinn in Copland?
No.
That's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Stallone fucking rules.
When Colin does this podcast, I will have him tell the story accurately. I'll give you a Reader's Digest version. Colin was at SNL and him and someone else were writing for Stallone and while Stallone was filming Copland here in New York, Stallone was like, come to set. And then Colin tells the story of a scene that Keitel is in and Colin was in his eye line and Keitel blew up at Colin because he was like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? And Stallone had to be like, oh, hold on a second. He's with me. And that's my writer. And I'm not going to tell this. I did that very
briefly. That must hurt because I know for a fact that Colin's favorite movie is Mean Streets.
Yeah.
So that's got to suck.
Well, Colin, and I want Colin on the podcast to tell the story exactly because he said, like, Keitel's doing the scene. And, you know, Colin. Oh,
I love Harvey Keitel. So that Colin's was like, going come like on.
This. It's fucking. I think this guy's yelling at me. He's like sitting there watching. He's going like, I think this guy's really mad at me.
But that's like the best actors. Sometimes the ones who are just lunatics like that. Like remember that Christian Bale thing?
Oh, good for you. I quote that all the time.
That guy, is clearly a little unhinged, but like, come on. I mean, he's fucking great.
He's unbelievable. But but Keitel getting mad at Colin Quinn for being in his eye line is one of my favorite stories.
Yeah.
So I'll make sure that when he's on it, he tells it because he...
It's his like De Niro bomb story is also the most epic.
Well,
that's like the craziest. And Homeless Pimp
was just telling me that he just saw De Niro for the first time since the bombing or whatever, since he bombed.
I love that Homeless Pimp and Quinn are doing stuff together.
Oh, it's the best.
I think also Colin Quinn Cop Show is like the most underrated.
Makes me laugh
hard. I think I've watched them all multiple times.
The Jim Norton episode specifically makes me laugh.
The Rat.
Yeah.
Dude, Norton's new material
unbelievable.
Is so fucking good.
Unbelievable.
I love following him because I get to see him every time. It's new shit.
He's always been a guy. Jim Norton's always been a guy where his stand-up to me has been criminally underrated.
Yeah.
Obviously, he made a lot of noise on O&A and he was like great on O&A, but you go watch his stand-up and you're like, it is so well thought out and funny.
It's like poignant, this new hour, without trying to be like, I mean, some of the bits, I'm like, that's like a beautiful bit. Like, I love it.
He's a guy that I really, really
see him on the road for sure.
I really look up to because I'll go see him at the Cellar and he treats the Cellar for what it was. I think we glorify it because of his generation, because of Colin and Jim and Patrice and Bird and all those guys that we like idolize that were at the Cellar. We kind of put it up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
What I like about Jim is it's the Cellar from the 90s.
He's in working
the
early out. 2000s.
But he's going
to
work out.
But that's why I think Quinn and Norton or Attell are the most fun guys to follow there because they're doing so much new shit. I do most of my new shit on the road because I like to have the buffer of, you know, all the old shit killing around it. But they don't, I mean, they don't really care. I think we I'm going to be better about it this next hour because I'm burning this shit in March. So like I'm going to have to be.
Well, I'm at the point right now where I'm writing a brand new hour.
Yeah. You just taped in Portland, right?
Yeah. And it's just fun to be like, what is this? Nothing.
It's fun, but it's just so painful every time.
Well, you know what I did is I went and I did the Port in Baltimore, which is great. It's like a awesome room ran by a comic. It's like 100 seats. And I did four shows. And I was just like, I let the audience know.
That's what you gotta do.
I was like, hey, this is all, I just had my note cards out. And I was like, some of the shows were unbelievable.
Yeah.
One or two of the shows, you're like, I'll see you next time around. And I promise it'll be an act.
I think the problem is when you're working out and like when we were working out at those funny bones that were papered and people weren't there to see us, you have to prove yourself.
Yeah.
And you're terrified that people like, you have the track record now that people know you're good. So you're like, I have to rebuild. This is the process.
Yeah.
You know, but there is still that insecurity. Like, who the fuck am I to do this when they came out, they paid to see me, but you have to get that out of your head and, you know, and you cushion it. You could throw something else. You start to find stuff that works, but man, when you lose that rhythm, especially with a story, when it's like does it feel
bad?
There's
no ending? Where you reach back for something and there's no joke and you go like, there's going to be something there someday.
Well, that's why you almost...
I don't have it right now.
You need the beginning and the end first because there's nothing worse than... And sometimes you need to strengthen the ending because there's nothing worse than when you have the story and you're like, all right, let me try this new ending. So now you're waiting 7 minutes every night of buildup and then you're just disappointed.
Yeah, just to not come. Just to be like, and there's nothing there.
It's nothing.
Here's my question to you.
Yeah.
As friends who have gone together through comedy and both had some success and now we get to do some cool stuff with things that we love... So we're talking about the Knicks. If there happens to be in this season, next season, a Knicks championship.
Yeah.
Where they go on a run. I know you'll be there. Yeah. I know you'll be at the home games.
I'll try.
Hypothetically, they clinch at the Garden. They win the title.
Yeah.
Are you Kevin Harting it? Are you able to get onto the court and celebrate?
I hope they let everybody on the court.
But my question is, they probably won't. Are you one of the people that gets on there?
I think, realistically, I think it's going to be hard to be near the floor on a game 7 at the Garden.
At the Garden? Yeah, so, you're going to have like
every New York... If I'm in the 400s, I'll be fucking thrilled. Yeah. And I don't know if I'll make the floor, but I don't give a shit. That's being in the building is all that matters to me. You know?
And I think, would a Knicks championship be more important to you than an Emmy?
Oh, yeah. I don't give a fuck about Emmys. I mean, like, for me, it's like just making a living at this shit and and having fans who come to see you on the road and having a good group of friends. Like, I have no complaints right now. I like my life right now a lot. But Yeah, Emmy, no. I mean, but by the way, cut to if I ever did that and I would just be like, I trashed this. But no, I don't.
If you ever won an Emmy, I hope that the second you won it, you go, I would trade this for a Knicks championship.
I feel like Spike basically did that when he won an Oscar when he was looking at the Knicks score. But that's,
if you did that, I would be like, all right, no, Sam. If you're like, take this back. I want a chip for the Knicks.
And by the way, I never will, so it's not something I have to worry about. But
you
like,
don't know that, man. You're a talented dude.
I am not going to win an Emmy ever, but I appreciate that. But the Knicks...
Hold this footage.
The Knicks...
HP, hold this footage.
The Knicks winning a championship would be cool. That's the thing is, like, I'm not like a, you know, a greedy fan. Like, I am a mentally ill fan. Like, I will... Yeah. I do expect, like, oh, man, there was a clip of me... There was a clip of me on Barstool Big Cat, PM, pardon my take.
Yeah, yeah.
That they were killing me because I guaranteed Giannis would sign with the Knicks.
Oof.
And of course, 2 weeks after he re-upped with Milwaukee,
they gave him all the money in Milwaukee.
But well, yeah, he runs the city now.
Yeah.
But we, I love Giannis, and I Giannis and Minaj hosted his benefit, so I got to do a set on it. And afterwards, you know, he asked if I was a Bucks fan. I said, "Fuck the Bucks, go Knicks." I said, "But I respect your team. I do respect your team a lot.
Respectfully.
I mean, I loved it was when they had Holiday and everything. Sure. And I'm like, I love all those guys. Middleton, they're great players. But when the
fandom gets in the way,
I was like, "No, Knicks for life." And he looked at me like this, and I said, "I'm a New Yorker. What do you want from me?" And he goes, "Well, you never know where I end up in 2025." And his brother gave me a look like this, and I was like, "They fucking played me."
Yeah, they did.
They fucking played me. I was talking shit everywhere.
Yeah, they did. They played you.
That wasn't like a rumor. I got it straight from the guy.
Yeah, he went like, maybe we'll have it happen. You're going around going, it's going to happen.
It's like happened. When a really hot chick flirts with you and then you're like, oh, she flirts with everybody.
It's the Hooters waitress.
Yeah.
Giannis touched your arm.
Yeah.
He went like this.
And I came.
Can I bring you anything,
baby? Came.
And you go, I think this guy's into me.
Dude. Yeah, so I sounded pretty stupid. So I do have that mental illness of a Knicks fan.
I have it to where like when the 49ers schedule comes out.
Yeah.
Like Bill Burr was smarter and he like routed his schedule so he could go to games.
Amazing.
I just make sure I can be at home and watch it because I'm such a psycho that I'm like, I need to be at home to watch the Niners. And so when people are like, where are you at this weekend? I'm like, well, the 49ers play Saturday night in the divisional game. I'm going to be right here because it is. It'll change my mood.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, look, if the Knicks win, I'm a Giants fan. And when they beat the Patriots the first time, I was truthfully like, I'm good for life. You can't top beating Brady. And then they did it again.
Yeah, because the 49ers dropped the punt at the 10-yard line. That was that second time, if you really want to get into it. NFC Championship game, and we basically stopped you and turned over the ball over on downs, and then we fumbled it, and you guys kicked a field goal and went on to beat Brady a second time. Congratulations.
Cool. It was a pretty cool win, though.
Congratulations.
It was awesome.
But
yeah, Manningham, that fucking over-the-shoulder catch.
It was unbelievable. I feel the way you feel about the Giants, about the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I've been waiting since 94 for the Niners to win another Super Bowl in like such an anticipated way of like getting close that when the Nuggets won it, it was such a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
We kept thinking something bad was going to happen with Phoenix or LA and then Miami. We were like, one of these teams is going to beat us. That when they won it, I went like this. Now I'm cheering for the Knicks. Now I'm cheering for the Sixers, for Jay, where I'm like, You guys go have a championship. Have one. It's very nice. Whereas, like, if the 49ers win a Super Bowl.
Oh, you mean Embiid? You think Embiid? Yeah.
But I'm just kind of like, yeah. My attitude towards
it. I like Embiid a lot.
My attitude's like, hey, you should try winning a championship.
I love Jokic and Embiid. Yeah. I love when they play against each other. They're both so great.
They played 2 nights ago.
NBA is so good right now.
But the point I'm making is, like, if the 49ers won a Super Bowl this year, next year, I would have the same passion of like, well, we got to get another one. Like, I don't have the whole like, and I hope the Giants do great. I'm like, man,
no. We
fuck off. We only
have room for that much, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll put it this way. Like, I'm a New Yorker. I want to see the Bills win a Super Bowl at some point. I think their fan base is so hungry and they deserve it. And they're great fans.
So now this is weird situation where because of McDaniel, I have a whole different.
Because Dolphins have to be your number two.
And they are.
Yeah.
Like with a bullet. Like they're like the Dolphins.
But now that they're out, can you be like, it'd be cool if the Bills went to the Super Bowl.
How, and that shows
and I
you,
like, I like,
that shows you where my fandom is.
Yeah.
Because I can like let go a little bit and go like, well, the Bills fan base kind of needs something.
They fucking
need
it.
But then at the same time, 49ers are in it. So I'm like, go Niners, burn everyone
down. If the Niners are out, and I don't know when this is coming out, but if the Niners are out.
Hopefully they're not.
But say they're out. Would
they're
you
healthy who, and they
who
play well.
So the Niners and the Dolphins are out.
Lions.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lions or Bills. If it's a Lions-Bills Super Bowl,
oh my
if
God.
The 49ers get eliminated
I'd
somehow,
be happy for either fan base.
Lions-Bills, I'm fine with. I it's the opposite of like when it was the Patriots-Rams, where right. I was like, fuck both these people.
Right.
But that was before I started dating Katie. Now, hey, go all Boston sports teams because of my love.
Never.
But I would.
I'm not in love with a Boston person.
Yeah.
But so I can say fuck all Boston teams.
I would say.
And I'll say it to Julian Edelman, my friend's face.
I would say that I am in a position now where, like, yeah, if the Lions and Bills were in the Super Bowl, I'd be like, this is great. One of these fan bases deserves that.
Yeah.
But if the 49ers are still in it, suck my dick, go Niners.
Yeah, no, you're a diehard Niners fan. I respect that. And I get your fandom.
Us
your
talking
fandom
like
makes
this,
sense. Yeah.
It's, well, as my therapist says,
yeah.
It's the only thing my dad and I had. And he goes, that's why all your emotion from your father is rooted into a sports organization. Because I'm like,
they drop a catch. Fuck you, Dad.
Dude, that's the energy I have. That's the energy I have when they lose. I'm like, so let me guess, the birthday card's not in the mail. Yeah, you fucking blow third and 15. It's a wheel route. You're supposed to sit on it as a safety.
It's one of the best offenses I've ever seen.
It's fun. We have a very 49ers have a very fun team. This talk makes me excited and nervous.
Football playoffs. There's something about it, but I will say the most excited I get, like you were talking about the cold, there's something about a playoff game in the snow, and I know you hate the Patriots, but like that Patriots Raiders game
was unbelievable.
Brady
that won. Launched the dynasty.
That was
the Tuck rule.
That game. Was a pretty cool,
yeah.
Like just the look.
I remember Packers Giants.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Favre's last game at Lambeau.
Let me tell you something about that game.
Favre's last game as the Packer.
Amani Toomer, who was one of my favorite Giants ever.
Yeah.
I remember. So he did my sports show when I had him on, and I asked him about that game, and it's one of those like. Urban legend. It just becomes, things just become myths, whatever. So I say, is it true that you took red pepper flakes on your socks and it was so cold they would like melt in your, from the sweat, it would melt in your feet to warm them up? And he goes, that's completely untrue. So it's like, you hear this like cool, like weird, I don't know. I just thought it sounded
cool.
Yeah,
that'd
be
cool. Like if I met Ronnie Lott and he still had his left pinky. Cause you know the story that he broke his finger and they were like, well, you can't play in it. And he's like, cut it off. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he has half of his left pinky. Because against the Giants, I think it was against the Giants, he broke his finger. And they were like, you can't play. And he's like, what if you cut it off? And they're like, what's up? And he's like, cut it off. And they're like, I guess you can play if we cut it off. He's like, great, cut it off.
Did you know, I'm sorry, was that
That's it?
Oh, well, Julian Edelman told me that he took...
Rice's daughter to prom.
Yes.
I know that story.
Hilarious. That Jerry Rice opens the door
shirtless
to fuck with him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if your hero
shirtless being like,
it's like, what? What are you going to do to her?
Well, you're also taking like a you're taking his daughter.
Yeah.
And Julian's a good looking dude.
He is.
So if you're Jerry, I understand why Jerry Rice did that. I'm taking Rice's.
He's a good looking dude, but he also doesn't have the ego of a good looking dude, weirdly, even though he's ripped. I mean, I used to change next to him for the shows and I'd be like, this isn't bad. This is humiliating.
So funny. He goes, do you want me to wash your shirt on my stomach? You're like, thanks.
But he had a lot of good looking dudes on his team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Brady, Amendola.
Let's talk about how hot the Patriots were. Katie, get in here.
There was
bust through the wall like the Kool-Aid man.
There was a lot of
She's
handsome
like,
dudes.
I'll let you know who was fucking hot on the Patriots. Well, Brady was the king hot.
Just but also by status.
But then you also
But Amendola is a handsome dude.
What about Wes Welker? Those eyes?
Yeah. Well, they were on the same team, but Edelman kind of took his spot.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, you look at all the handsome boys the Patriots have had.
I think Welker's kind of like a hillbilly. I think.
No, he's not. He's the man. He's the receivers coach for the Dolphins.
Oh, is he? All right, I made that up. Sorry, sorry, Wes.
Wes, you're a handsome boy. I'm just complimenting McDaniel's whole staff. And another thing, Vic Fangio, what a
Welker when he was on the Broncos.
Yeah, he was the head coach.
Is that weird for you because you're kind of part Denver fan?
I Broncos were my second team, but now they've been erased.
But remember the Manning Broncos when they had, that team was...
Well, you got to remember, Vic Fangio was the D coordinator for the 49ers when we went to the Super Bowl against the Ravens, which might happen again.
The Ravens are sick.
Yeah, dude.
And how about Stavros is like the king of Baltimore now. He's like fucking Jim Carrey in Baltimore. He's like...
I went by his house.
Yeah.
When I was doing the port.
Oh, shit.
I stopped by Stavi's house.
He's
the king of Baltimore.
Yeah, it's funny. He'll do phone calls with me sometimes. I'm like one of his phone call, like his walk phone calls.
Yeah.
And he just, it's not even fun talking to him because he's getting stopped every 30 seconds. You know what's funny? And I have to hear people be like, you're my favorite. I'm like, how about you call me like in a, like walk down an alley or something?
Shane. Yeah. When I'm on the phone with Shane Gillis and he'll like, he like lives in the burbs in Austin now.
I can't believe he moved to Texas.
Yeah, we were.
But he never liked New York.
We were taking a call. We were just like talking about something random, and then just out of nowhere, this guy's like, "Hey, sorry, man, I hate to bother you. And he's like, the conversation leaves or whatever. Shane goes, "Sorry, that was the UPS guy. Stopped his truck and ran over." And I was like, "That's
hilarious.
That's how famous he is now. People are on delivery routes and they're like, "Hold on, I gotta fucking bother this guy. I love his cast." I love you. Thank you for coming by.
Yeah,
and doing
this is. I rarely want to do a podcast, but when you text me, it's like one of the only times I get pumped. You know, And also you're in the hood, so that's huge.
Dude, you're just right down the block.
This is
just
nice.
Come over and hang out.
Seriously, let's fucking hang.
It was great. Yeah. We'll go. We'll find a good diner.
I love it. Let's go like halfway, and we'll find a place halfway in between.
Let's do that.
Yeah, let's.
I love that.
I love that
for like post spot meals or stuff.
Good diner.
Let's do it.
Huge.
You rule,
man.
Sam Morril, check out We Might Be Drunk. Check out.
You got to come back on soon, man.
Yeah, check out all of his specials on Netflix, YouTube. This guy's one of the best working stand-up comedians.
New one in March. We're taping, so.
He's unbelievable. He's one of my favorite joke writers.
You were so fucking, man, we did that gig in Canada. You were killing so fucking hard.
That was so fun to watch.
That was fun.
Man, you were.
And Nick Offerman, who's like the coolest dude.
What a great gig.
That was a fun gig.
That was something that I thought might suck and ended up being fucking fantastic.
It was awesome. And the fact that Nick Offerman is like, has like a 5 a.m. pickup and he's like, I'll drink a scotch with you guys.
Sam and I are both witnesses to tell you that Nick Offerman fucking rules.
He's the coolest dude.
He's a great dude. Yeah. And we had a fun hang with him.
Yeah.
You're the best.
You're the best, dude.